This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Grid Talk and happy Pride Month. My name is Ruby Price and today we're here to preview the 2024 Spanish Grand Prix. Joining me, we have Grid Talk's very own Owain Medford.
Hello.
And Louis Edwards.
Hello.
Before we get into the episode, we must thank our sponsor for this episode, Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. From baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA and boxing. Every stat, every matchup and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to their online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online. The game starts here. So as F1 returns to the Circuit de Catalunya, it hasn't always produced the best racing, but there have been some iconic moments in its history. Debut wins, inter-team rivalries boiling over, strategy mix-ups, and that was just 2016. Owain, what comes to mind when you think of the Spanish Grand Prix?
I mean, there's multiple, to be quite honest with you. The sort of 2021 time where Mercedes pulled a fast one on Red Bull again for a second time. You know, it was a bit fool me twice, shame on you, with the ability to sort of whether pit and then just rapidly smash down the gap and then pit again before Red Bull could respond and got the win in that way, similar to how they did in Hungary 2019. You know, that and if I sort of pick a more historical example, the 1994. I think it's the 1994 Spanish Grand Prix where Michael Schumacher from pole, you know, led the race until the opening sort of pit stop and then had a rapidly degenerating gearbox. And they left him with only fifth gear to play with. And this was in the era where, you know, tyre stops and refueling was a thing. So it was, you know, really difficult to get away from the pit stop. He managed to do that and still managed to finish in second, which I think is quite astounding. But those are sort of my two standout moments.
Yeah, for sure. 2021 and the fact that then Mercedes got played themselves, I think, later on in the season, or it might have been a season afterwards, but it couldn't have been the season afterwards. Louis, how about you? Any standout moments in Barcelona?
Unfortunately, I can't go as far back as Owain. It's a 1994. I know the PK move on Senna, I know that's always been a very iconic moment of Spanish Grand Prix history, but yeah, I was definitely not around when that was happening in the 80s. But I guess when I think of the Spanish Grand Prix, I think of the GOAT, Aston Maldonado, when he won his one and only race in 2012 before his garage exploded. Of course, you know, he was just too hot to handle that weekend, and so was the equipment. So there's only sort of two main things I remember. And also, growing a Fernando Alonso fan, the Spanish Grand Prix always sort of meant a lot because it was his home race, and he has some great races there. And his latest, you know, his last win in 2013 was there, so that's one that always sticks in my mind.
Of course, a way to tie it back to Fernando Alonso, as always, from Louis. But yeah, I completely forgot about Pastor Maldonado, which, you know, I know, right? I know.
How could you?
I mean, his one and only win, though, you know, because McLaren didn't fuel Lewis Hamilton up correctly, but he still had to actually deliver, which is something that he didn't do a lot of the rest of his time. So yeah, absolutely standout moment. Iconic. But we've thought about the past. How about the future? More specifically, the 2026, as the FIA revealed their plans for smaller, nimbler, and more environmentally friendly cars from 2026. Owain, as well as a near 50-50 split between electric and internal combustion power, active aerodynamics will be used. For the listeners at home, what actually is active aerodynamics and how will it impact the driving in 2026?
Right. So we actually do have active aerodynamics in Formula One, and we have done previously. So so if you could wind your clock back to the 2009 and 2010 era of F1 cars, you'll notice that you'll remember if you played the games, there was the ability to change the wing angle. So two times per lap, drivers had the ability to, as I say, change the front wing angle between two preset positions to change the downforce load on the cars. I don't think they were particularly successful, and obviously they were dropped for 2011. But also, you know, we've been having it for quite a while. So, you know, obviously with the DRS, once you were within 1 second of the car in front in a race situation, or any time in practice and qualifying within the DRS zones, obviously you can, like, you know, actively change the aerodynamic setup of the car. And that's what it is. It's the ability to take the aerodynamic bodywork that we have on the car and alter it in between, you know, differing positions to change the aerodynamic effects that's happening on the car. You know, this is sort of thing that's not really been, you know, into Grand Prix racing, because it's sort of seen as an impure thing, really. But that's what it is. You know, every other form of aerodynamics is what we would call fixed aerodynamics. And then previously there have been rules, and there probably still will be, to say that, you know, you can't have any movable aerodynamic devices. That's essentially what it is. But that will change, obviously, with the 2026 regulations, and we'll have, I assume, regulated movable aerodynamic devices.
Yeah, for sure. Louis, the plans for 2026 seem to have moved away from the limitations of the ground effect cars that we've seen since 2022. Cars apparently having a lot less downforce, particularly in high-speed corners. But there's been a lot of criticism of these plans from the FIA. Where do you stand on what's being lined up for 2026?
I don't know. I think it's a balance that the FIA have to do anytime they release or come up with new regulations. Of course, they want to keep the racing competitive, but you've also got to make it a spectacle, because that's, you know, ultimately what they want to do. They've got to make fun, exciting racing while actually being, you know, feasible for the teams to do. You know, I'm someone who's all for closer racing. You know, that's what we were promised with this current set of regulations. Has it worked to how much the FIA intended? No, the cars are significantly faster than the FIA had intended. Teams are very smart. They will change things. So, you know, you always have the racing purists like, I don't want the electric engines. Let's bring back fully, you know, aspirated engines who, you know, make everyone within a 100-mile radius deaf. You know, it's sometimes we got to move away from that. And I know there was a lot of hope for these regulations from pundits and people within F1 that that we would move slightly more away from electric and more biofuels, synthetic fuels, fully aspirated, loud. But for me, if it delivers close racing, if we can get the costs of the sport down, actually allow more teams into Formula One, that's a whole other thing. But if there's at least a benchmark of the gate is not so high that it's not impossible for teams to get in. So if it's better, cheaper, and just more enjoyable, I'm all for it. But we don't know until the teams put their cars in testing, because that's what we knew. We didn't know with these regulations how it was going to be until we saw the testing. When I think that's what we're just going to have to wait for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, that's kind of one of the reasons I think it was a closed Barcelona test in 2022, the first time we saw the cars hit the ground. Well, we didn't see it as punters, but like obviously the first time we actually saw the cars in the end of it was when they were in Bahrain doing the testing. But before last weekend's Canadian Grand Prix, we had more confirmation of the grid for 2025, with Sergio Perez signing a new deal with Red Bull, Yuki Tsunoda signing on for more with VCorp. One of these drivers had a significantly better performance in the race weekend, and whilst it has become something of a meme to be dunking on Checo Perez, it was hardly a drive to celebrate the new contract, was it, Owen?
Yeah, it was absolutely terrible. I mean, we've been through it before, but it's one of those things where you looked at it and went, well, why did, like, we told you this was going to happen. And it sort of, I reinforces the point that, you know, I don't think necessarily, I mean, I fully understand the need, as Red Bull has found to their cost multiple times before, to have their drivers be, you know, have a more performant driver, let's say, and a less performant driver, per se, to back him up. You know, otherwise, you know, you get sort of the Moto21 debacle and the various problems that we saw, you know, through 2010, for example, or even, you know, going to sort of 2018 in Baku. Like, I understand that need to have that separation in drivers. But to be quite honest, I don't think Checo is necessarily the driver. I mean, you know, we took someone who, you know, as we sort of get the grid getting closer and closer together, you're seeing that 0.3, 0.5 of a second that Checo is away from Max be the gap between, you know, obviously it was fine when they had a very dominant car last year, but now they've not got so much of a dominant car and, you know, a sort of a bit of a championship in our hands. And there are teams left, right and centre taking points away from Red Bull. I mean, as much as they got the win, there were multiple teams that scored more than Red Bull at the Canadian Grand Prix. And I can continue to see that happening. And that's not going to win you, a Constructors' Championship. And that's, let's be honest, that's where the money's paid out. The marketing's very nice of a Drivers' World Champion. But, you know, I don't think Red Bull is hurting for sponsorship or sponsorship money. But like I said, at the end of the day, surely it helps to be able to charge that much. But, you know, to be able to have that money topped up by the reason that you're meant to race in the first place, which is the prize money. And if they're not doing that, then, you know, I don't know, I personally see it as an issue. It's not the driver I would have picked.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think from one perspective, just to sort of put a counter argument to it, Max Verstappen almost, I think, potentially actually single-handedly won the Constructors' Championship for Red Bull himself last season. He had more points than Ferrari and Mercedes himself. But elsewhere on the grid, Louis, Carlos Sainz heading into his home race is still reportedly without a seat for 2025. Any team with an empty seat is being associated with him, but the most likely candidates seem to be Williams, Sauber or Haas, you know, and I think with the more recent news from the FIA regarding the, you know, change to the super license requirements, like if someone over the age of 17 has displayed the maturity and, like, you know, that they can be eligible for one. Is there any likelihood of the moves to Williams, Sauber or Haas moving? And do you think, like, Mercedes now, with the ability of maybe putting Kimi Antonelli in the seat, like, has that firmly closed off that option?
No, that is what I have kind of taken away from that. James Vowles actually came out recently saying that Williams are looking to make big signing, which I think is really basically chucked Logan Sargeant to the curb. I was like, because if you're considering Logan Sargeant to be your big signing, you're not watching the races. Yeah, unfortunately, I do think it's going to be Williams for Carlos Sainz. If I was to, you know, put my house on it, I probably would say Williams is going to be the likely destination, which is a shame. I think Sainz is deserving of so much better. You know, you look at what he's done in Formula One, he's never really put a foot wrong. You know, he had that time at Ferrari where he became, you know, the gravel trap merchant. But since then, he's really pushed on. He's, you know, been a great rival and teammate for Charles, really pushing him, doing better than I think anybody would have thought he would. And now he's just kind of being chucked to the curb. He was chucked to the curb by Toro Rosso. He was chucked to the curb by Renault. You know, I think the only team that's actually really treated him with any sort of respect was McLaren. But, you know, when Ferrari come knocking, you're gonna take that, aren't you? I just asked Lewis Hamilton. And yeah, he's Williams seems like a really big downgrade. And then also on the super licensing, it's nice to see the FIA making changes for drivers that aren't indie car drivers. It's very nice and convenient. You know, it's such a shame that they can't get any indie car drivers the right amount of super license points to maybe get a Formula One seat. Pato O'Ward, Colton Herta. It's ridiculous that they've now just said, oh yeah, sure, Kimi Antonelli, he can drive in Formula One. It's
that's probably pressure that's come from, I imagine that's possibly pressure that's come from Mercedes to get that push through.
Because I think Toto Wolff has been very adamant that Kimi Antonelli was his number one choice and he was going to go to hell or high water to try and get him in that seat. And I think, yeah, we can say it's probably as good as done. Toto doesn't want to miss out like he did with Max. He doesn't want to miss out like he did with Piastri. He wants his Max Verstappen in that seat. And I think it also is a bit of a kick to the teeth of George Russell. George Russell was stuck in Williams for how many years and then given his break. And now they're just like, yeah, let's get this 17-year-old straight in this seat and let's get him racing.
Not only that as well, you know, the second George Russell joins the Mercedes team is when they are not front runners, which is poor timing. But maybe the fact that they're currently not front runners is probably why it's such a good opportunity to be putting someone like Kimi Antonelli in that seat. Like, maybe we could see kind of like what we've seen with Oscar Piastri, where he was in a McLaren where, you know, there was no pressure on performing because the McLaren wasn't performing. Obviously, it got better as the season went on. But like now we're seeing a very good like Oscar Piastri, and you know the talk is that, you know, he's gonna get a win at some point. Maybe it won't take as long as it took his teammate, a race win specifically. I will also say, before anyone comes at me about his sprint But yeah, speaking of Ferrari drivers, Owain, obviously we were just talking about Carlos Sainz. How are they going to bounce back from their catastrophic Canadian Grand Prix? Like, Charles retired due to an engine issue. Carlos took himself and Alex Albon out of the action with a lazy spin. And no Ferrari-powered cars finished in the top 10. What does Barcelona hold for the Scuderia?
A more conventional track, quite honestly. You know, I think it's more towards Ferrari's strength. They weren't amazing. You know, they weren't amazing. They won the race in Monaco. But, you know, it was a bit weird because, you know, obviously Montreal's got the dichotomy of you've got these slow to medium speed corners. And so you think crank on the downforce because you're going to need it when you're going that slowly. And then you have a number of quite long straights, you know, and they just really couldn't get dialed into that circuit all weekend. It had been resurfaced, and you know, and Red Bull had their issues as well. You know, I think that, you know, the car is just fundamentally a bit faster, so that obviously sort of masked that slash enabled them to do it. And you know, I think they were just out of step, Ferrari, a little bit. The good thing about Ferrari is that, you know, obviously they've got the resources. And
this episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
But the Canadian Grand Prix Spanish Grand Prix at Catalunya is a chassis circuit. You know, it's obviously they go testing there. They know it well, and it's the sort of thing I can see them bouncing back from very, very quickly because it's well known. You know, it hasn't changed so much so far as we know since last year in any meaningful way. And you know, because of that, at least you've got more of a reference point. You know, it's not sort of the statistical outlier that maybe the last two Grand Prix have been. You know, one with the highest of highs and one with the lowest of lows. So I think it should be easier for them, Catalunya. You know, I assume they have an upgrade since we're coming back to Europe. That seems to make sense. And I think they should be better off. But yeah, it is a cause for concern. But I think it sort of just moves it slightly away from the statistical outlier that Canada is.
Yeah, certainly not a five-star performance from the Ferraris last time out. But if you enjoy this podcast, we'd love it if you could take five to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to follow us on all of our social channels at Grid Talk UK. And also, if you're one of the 59% of people who are watching but aren't yet subscribed to our YouTube channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe. So when we were at the Spanish Grand Prix last season, Louis, Mercedes were, from one perspective, on the front foot, finishing second and third behind Max Verstappen. Is there any chance of that this weekend too, after appearing strong in Canada, but What of the talks that we're hearing as well about tension in the team?
Yeah, Mercedes are in a weird spot. There's definitely, I think we can say with confidence that Mercedes are on the up. You know, their car does seem to be working. It seems to be more competitive. They're, you know, scoring much better results generally. And even last year where their car was, face it, terrible. They really managed to pull out a good result when they weren't trying to murder each other in qualifying, that was. But I think Mercedes is just at a point where they've got a driver like George Russell. He's very assured of himself. He's got a lot of confidence. You know, he has always been a fighter against Lewis. You know, he wasn't like a Bottas who was more than happy to play second fiddle. He has, you know, he has consistently taken the fight to Lewis. And now we have Lewis who is on his way out. You know, Lewis is no longer the top dog at Mercedes. And that is very evident. I think we're seeing that more and more as the season progresses. Lewis will just be pushed to the side, you know, and some people think that's harsh. Some people will be like, oh my God, that's so ungrateful for everything Lewis did. But that's the nature of Formula One. Eventually, Lewis is going to leave. You can't like hold him tight and go, oh, it's fine, it's fine. Eventually, you've just got to, you hit a point where you're like, Lewis is going. We can't really share, divulge any information about next year's car. He's going to a rival team. He just gets pushed out of the way. And I think maybe Lewis is feeling that a bit. And he was very upset after Canada. We all seen that he was really not happy. And George is, you know, doing what George is doing. He's, you know, he was running a pretty good race, had a great qualifying in Canada. And I will not be surprised if that just continues for the rest of the season as Lewis sort of starts to be forced out by, no, not forced out, but sort of slightly pushed aside by Mercedes. George is the top dog. They're going to, you know, really focus on George, how George likes the car. George is going to be quicker. Lewis is going to maybe fall off, not performance-wise, but he just, you know, he doesn't have the same feel for the car. And he'll go off to Ferrari. George will be at Mercedes. I think it's just the way the team is. You know, tension can be many things, but I don't think it's going to be a case of George and Ross. You know, George and Hamilton, like, really, really sort of throw fisticuffs. I think it's just the natural thing of Formula One. He gets pushed aside. George is now the new top dog.
Yeah, I mean, the team that are reportedly having fisticuffs, Alpine, Owen, they brought home a solid double points finish in Canada, but the discourse was all about the team orders that came into play that cost Esteban Ocon the position ahead of his teammate Pierre Gasly. Were Alpine in the right to favour the driver expected to continue with the team in 2025? And how might they fare in Spain, where there is such a focus on needing a good chassis, which that car just doesn't seem to have?
I mean, it's a difficult thing, I think, when you, for lack of a better term, boot out a driver and, you know, publicly scold him initially, and then, you know, have a meeting, and then, you know, in the next race, it's announced that you'll be leaving the team, not effective immediately, but at the end of this year. Like, as a driver, what kind of incentive do you even have to play ball? Bearing in mind, you know, sort of, you know, bearing in mind that maybe, you know, Esteban Ocon's been in F1 for quite a while. Let's hope that is. You know, he'll be hoping that he can find another seat. You know, and the only real sort of, I guess, reason that he would play ball is that obviously he's going to want to show that he's a team player for the next team he goes to. But, you know, if he already feels like his options are closing off, he'll kind of, I guess, feel like a dog cornered where, you know what, it doesn't matter. You know, what incentive does he have to with, you know, there's 15 races left. We've got, you know, what would have been in the old days, an entire F1 season left, and the points are an awful lot higher now, particularly at the upper end, the upper scale of it, and with the I mentioned it before, but with the field so much closer and so much more competitive, Alpine are rapidly, you know, looking at like the, you know, seventh and eighth best team. You know, I guess my question is, you know, why did, maybe it's massive sort of naivety. I mean, I can't say naivety. He's been in motorsport for far too long to be able to be this naive, but to come out and say those things that openly, publicly put responsibility on one driver, publicly kick out one driver, a third of the way into the season. It just seems a little like, it seems like a bit of an own goal, and it just seems like it's probably caused a two thirds of a season worth of hurt where he's got no skin in the game, so it doesn't matter. You know, obviously he's a professional, but at the end of the day, surely I think it's a fairly human reaction to have been like, you know, to quiet quit, to steal a term from the various new goods organizations. You know, that's my take on it. It seems an odd move. I mean, I'm not saying I would have, you know, I'd have maybe done it differently were it me.
quiet quitting. Didn't think I'd hear that on the podcast today. But Louis, what about McLaren then? Lando Norris most likely lost out on a win in Montreal due to the safety car. But the team are looking incredibly quick this season. They're most consistently the team challenging the Red Bull of Verstappen ahead. If Norris can avoid picking up front wing damage in the first corner this time around in Spain, like, can he make right the wrongs of 2023? And where do you see Piastri in all of this?
Lando's had a really horrid string of luck in Spain.
I can't really think of a race Norris has done, like, had a nice clean race. You know, when I think of Norris in Spain, I think, yeah, last year losing his front wing and then also having a big tangle of Stroll. I think it was 2019, 2020. Not good.
But no, Lando Norris has been very good this year, despite, yeah, he maybe should have won in Canada, but it's, some might call it karma for what happened in Miami. You know, you get what, you know, you get what you're given in Formula One. He was given a nice a safety car help in Miami, and then he got it cruelly taken away from him in with the safety car in Canada. So who knows? But Lando Norris, the only driver to score a point in every single race this season, has been brilliant. The car, the team, everything in McLaren has been really good this year, and it's nice because it's the first time I've been able to say that in quite a long time. And I'm really excited what could happen in Spain. I think a lot of McLaren fans, you know, we go into race weekends now and going, oh, maybe we could fight. Maybe, like, it's now a yes, there's a very good chance that not only Lando, but just like where Oscar's going to be. Oscar's right there. And it's easy to overlook Oscar because maybe in the racing he's not doing as well. But in qualifying, he's always right there. You can see the gaps between the McLarens are always very close, which means both drivers are getting the absolute maximum out of that car, which is great. And that's what you want to see in a team. Yes, Oscar's had some issues with the race, be it strategy, be it just general racecraft. But he's, you know, he's only in his second season of Formula One. You can't be too harsh. And he's still getting great results. He's still pulling in great a point which McLaren need to, you know, continue this constructors battle. So that's exactly where I expect McLaren to be. I expect them to be at the front, fighting the Red Bull, Lando being on the front foot, Oscar being a step or two behind, being the rear gunner, you know, doing a brilliant job as he always does.
Absolutely. And after the, you know, contrasting team results between McLaren and Ferrari in Canada, McLaren have made a lot of ground on Ferrari in the constructors as well. So, you know, that third place that they're currently occupying could be second, depending on how Ferrari perform at the more traditional Spanish Grand Prix. But we've had some speculation on what could happen. Let's get some predictions down on paper, starting with you, Owain. Who are you predicting for pole position, and then how does your Spanish podium look?
I think, sort of given everything that I've said, like I say, Spain is a chassis track. It's a very predictable track. It's one that the teams know almost too well, I would say. And for that reason, I believe it's going to be a Max Verstappen pole. I think he'll get his mojo back. You know, we're going back to a circuit that's a little bit less bumpy and more to the strengths of the Red Bull. So yeah, that's who I believe will take pole.
And your podium?
Oh, my podium. I don't know if you're going to go to Louis first. Sorry. My podium. You know what? I'm going to go for a Max Verstappen win again. And then, you know what? I think Carlos Sainz in second. And, you know, as much, again, you need balance around Catalunya, and I don't think the Mercedes necessarily has it, despite, you know, the upgrades they have put on. There's meant to be another one coming, I believe. But for that reason, I think maybe McLaren are going to be fighting with it. So of them, I think Piastri.
And yourself, Louis?
Well, best to be a contrarian, but I think the Ferraris are going to do, I think the Ferraris are going to bounce back, and I think we're going to see a much better performance from them this weekend. So I'm going to go with the one lap wonder, which is Charles Leclerc. I think he can, you know, edge it out, but unfortunately I think in the race it won't be enough. I think the Red Bull may be a bit too quick, so my podium would be Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, and then Lando Norris.
Similar vibes going on in the sense of a strong McLaren performance. Like, it's hard to argue against a Verstappen pole position and probably a Verstappen win as well, but Lando Norris P2 for me and Carlos Sainz P3 is my podium and pole predictions. But what about something bold, a bit picante, not likely to actually happen, but what a race it would be if it did. Owain, your bold prediction, please.
Perez to be in the top 10.
I feel like you just took Louis.
I think I stole it, yeah.
Was it by any chance yours as well, Louis?
It might have been.
I'm so sorry, Louis. This just adds fuel to the fire that Tom believes that we are the same person.
I don't know. Who else is not very good? That might not get it. Guan Yu Zhou, not only will he make it, he'll qualify
in the Q2, get to Q2, qualify in Q2, and then I think he'll finish 10th.
Louis, Owain stole yours. You've stolen mine. I was going to throw mine out in and say that Sauber will get their first point of the season. And I felt like Joe was probably the more likely of the two to do it.
Right, so Ruby, what you've got to do now is that you've got to predict now what my prediction is, which is that the number 12 Proton Competition Porsche is going to get the win at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. That's how that works. Like, if we're going to do the full cycle of three people.
The problem is this show's coming out after the race has happened, so...
So we'll know by then if it did or not.
Yeah, if it happened, I'm the greatest genius in the world to steal Owain's prediction. But no, you know, if people want to hear any more from us or yourself, Owain, where can people...
I don't personally have anything to plug, but in Spain, we will have the full gamut of support series. We're back on European soil, so here they come. So we have them all back. We have F3 and F2, and you can listen all about them on our sister show, Formula Talk, and you can find that wherever you find our podcasts.
And Louis, is there anything you want to plug at this point?
Sorry, just when Owain says that we have the full category, I was thinking like the Super Smash Bros. Trailer. They're all here. One of two.
Play as your favourite characters. Owain, maybe.
No, don't say anyone. We'll get sued by Nintendo. They're incredibly litigious.
Yeah, they are. I think they'd even happily admit that. But no, I also don't really have anything to plug. So make sure to at Grid Talk on all socials. That is on X, Threads, YouTube, even. Let's see our handle on YouTube and Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to find more from me, I am at Ruby Price on YouTube. But Grid Talk is available on YouTube, to say YouTube so many times in the last few sentences, where most race shows are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Apple Music, Verbal, and Pocket Cast. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our huge back catalog of shows, previews, and reactions to qualifying in the backlog, but race results going forwards as well, obviously. Consider supporting the channel on Patreon so you can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. And also make sure that you subscribe so you're first to know when each new weekly episode is released. We'll be back soon with plenty more F1 content. It is, of course, the Spanish Grand Prix this weekend. Thank you very much for listening to Grid Talk, presented by Bet Online, and goodbye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.